So I will try to speak slowly in English, but as Hans said, I can answer or explain some things in German, because ich habe auch ein bisschen Deutsch gelernt, und das geht auch. Ich bin seit 5 Jahren in Deutschland, ich forsche in Botanik. Und was ist denn los mit der Anzeige hier?
Zum einen 800 mal 600 mit 60 Hertz?
Ich bin 800 mal 600 jetzt.
Und am besten ist es, den Rechner einzuschalten, wenn der Monitor drinsteckt, damit er das erkennt. Super, hat es eben funktioniert. Oh,
gut. ausschalten. Hey! So, jetzt geht er runter, oder?
Ja, schon.
Mensch. And perhaps you ask, why is a botanist, doing a presentation on CISC versus RISC or computer architectures? And, I must say I'm not an expert in hardware, but I am interested in computer workstations and other things, because I worked at the university and I've been able to pick up such old workstations and work with them. Okay, how about the monitor switch? It's not activated.
Whoa.
And wait, how would I then replicate this monitor? Yes, I got it here. Good. You would think I would have such things. Okay, very good. I just like to tinker with different systems, and so I've had exposure to various workstations that you can see now in the hall on display. For example, these SGI Indigos and some Enterprise computers, and I find it great that I could. Just find such systems which were worth, in the order of 30,000 DM at the time, and just pick them out of the garbage, turn them on, and try them out, and the various operating systems that they ran on. And so that brought me to making an experiment of, how the performance of CISC compared to RISC in the 1990s. So this is not really old technology that I'm going to present here. It is a fairly simple project, and I will just compare two systems, one Intel and one Alpha system, and compare them using benchmarks, and give a bit of a conclusion to this year. And, as I said, I'm a botanist. I'm no big I'm not trained at all in hardware or in programming. I have compiled, you know, one file programs and written macros, you know, to control microscopes and automate a few things, but nothing really complex. So a lot of this might be boring for you, but if you do have questions, then by all means ask, and be happy to explain what I can. But what I'm going to compare here is a CISC, the Complex Instruction Set Computer. These CPUs, such as the VACS, the Intel Architecture 32, starting from 386, and a VACS, and also the Motorola 68K series that are also CISC. They have both simple and complex instructions in their instruction set architecture. And example, simple things would be, let's say, load something from memory, do a rotate with the bits, or increment a register. And you have complex things such as a while loop or table lookups and other. That's just an extreme, okay? These are instructions that are extreme in the complexity of things. So we just have two extremes, but today you find insists there's a mixture of these two extremes in the instruction set. But at the time, the 80s, CISC CPUs had a limitation with their performance improvements, was that their architecture, the way they were built, they were complex, and the enhancements to performance were also difficult and costly in terms of time and effort to optimize. So in the 80s, late 80s, reduced instruction set computing took root. There are previous implementations of that, which I won't go into. But a risk, as I say here, mostly simple instructions. Of course, they've been since extended to include some complex things like, these MMX type of instructions in there, vectorized type of things. But the philosophy behind the design here was a study by IBM and some other groups that the compilers would make infrequent use of these complex instructions when they compiled a program. So they said, why not design a CPU that is simple? And such a CPU left more, they were simpler, and one could enhance the performance of such a CPU because the design itself was much simpler to work with. And there are many implementations of CISC architectures. There's the ARM. Over there was, an Archimedes, or what kind of computer was that?
I think an Archimedes.
Yeah, an Acorn Archimedes with a RISC CPU. That was a fairly successful home computer. And of course, the Power, made by IBM, PA RISC, by Hewlett-Packard. MIPS was a research thing from, was that the West or the East? I think it was from MIT, the MIPS, but somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. Spark, that's the guys that made the Sun computers, and finally the Alpha, which I will go present further here. So what did they do with these RISC CPUs? Well, one thing for enhancing the performance was pipelining, and that's simply overlapping the steps of execution of instructions. So let's say while one instruction was being decoded, the next one could be fetched from memory, and so on, and so that a theoretical one instruction per clock cycle could be executed with such a pipeline system. I'm going over this stuff very briefly. Superscalar, that is simply replicating functional units. So a CPU could have multiple ALUs and multiple FPUs or other blocks of the processor replicated, and that would enhance the performance so that instructions could be executed in parallel. Branch prediction was just a simply there are various methods to predict which branch of a decision will be taken and prefetch that branch. And out of order execution, that also has to do with successive instructions, and the result of one instruction might be used by the input for the next instruction, and they could be merged into one, or they could be exchanged in such a way that it could be optimized and something could be done in less clock cycles than doing them one after the other. And then finally, relating to superscalar systems, there's multi-threading so that threads could be dispatched to multiple execution units, or there could be fast switching of threads by, let's say, replicating the register set several times for a CPU, and one thread could be saved while another one's being executed and switch them around. So those type of performance improvements occurred during the 80s and the 90s, and such RISC systems were well suited for high performance computing at the time. They were used for scientific applications mostly. And then, Intel followed up on these improvements. They would start adding them to their CISC, the Intel Architecture 32, and in making such improvements that I just talked about here. And some other things that came up which are specific to the Intel architecture is the dual pipelining. And that would be to, this was done in the P6 series, starting with the Pentium Pro, which was to take their complex instructions and break them down into simpler, what they call, I believe, microcode, and with
compared to RISC instructions, maybe?
It is analogous to RISC instructions, breaking them down into the simpler instructions. So that's why they say, okay, well, since the P6 Intel CPUs have kind of a RISC, you know, built into it, into this, you know, into these micro instructions, micro operations. But still, it's a CISC computer. It takes those legacy complex instruction set from the x86 system and uses that. But Intel would take these instructions, break them down, and they could be executed, shared between two units, and make it the execution of these things a lot quicker. And something that came out in the Pentium 4, hyper-threading, that's one specific thing for Intel, and that's a simultaneous multi-threading, which having more than one thread operating in parallel, so not just simply switching from one thread to the next thread and so on, but having multiple threads. And of course, you know, today we have multi-core CPUs, which it's not applicable to this presentation right now. So the two systems that I'm comparing, the two CPUs, the Alpha and the Intel Architecture 32, I'm just going through in this timeline, and I can see that the text is a little bit small for your eyes, I'm sorry. 1992 was when the Alpha, when DEC introduced the Alpha. And they started out with the 21064 CPU, And already in that year, 1992, their Alpha CPU ran at a maximum 192 megahertz. 1992, that was unbelievable to someone who was used to working on home computers. And in that year, the 486 DX2 reached 66 megahertz. And then it also had an L1 cache and a floating point unit in there. The Alpha was a superscalar, so it did have two integer units built into there already from the beginning. One other big difference between the two CPU architectures is the Alpha was built from the ground up as a 64-bit CPU. Its registers were 64 bits wide. Intel architecture, as you can see from the name, was a 32-bit register width. So again, you have something to take into account here, that the registers internally are double the size in the Alpha, and if one was looking at memory throughput, you could see that that would be greater than the Intel architecture. Pentium came out in 1993 at 66 megahertz, and a new CPU called the 21066 was introduced. That was a kind of a low-cost version of the Alpha, which was later put onto small motherboards that could be used on a desktop system. 1994, the 21064 reached 300 megahertz. The Pentium 54 here, 100 megahertz. 1995 was the introduction of the 21164, the next generation of Alphas, 500 megahertz, Pentium Pro 200. So Intel has taken a bit of a jump, but you can see that clearly if you just look at megahertz, which not such a good description of computer power. DEC was clearly in the lead in that megahertz speed. And they kept up with that through the years. 1997 is the year that I'm going to focus on, and I'm going to compare a 21164 PC. This is a DEC CPU that was designed specifically for a PC or a home computer kind of thing. And reached up to 666 megahertz. Pentium 2 came out in that year at a maximum of 300 megahertz. 1998 was not such a good year. The 264 came out, which was a big advance in the Alpha. It had, I think it duplicated all of the functional units of the CPU. So it was completely superscalar, but it was also sold to Compaq. Unfortunately, Compaq had no more interest in Alpha CPUs. They were looking forward to this, this sort of vapor hardware at the time of the Itanium that Intel was developing, which didn't come out until I think 2001, I believe. So they didn't really support the Alpha anymore. Hewlett-Packard bought out Compaq later that year, and Hewlett-Packard itself said, okay, we will continue to sell Alpha systems. But very little work was put into developing the Alpha CPU itself. So, and in that time, the Pentium 2 Xeon came out. That was the server CPU for Intel. 99, the 264 reached 750 megahertz. Pentium 2 Xeon, also the same megahertz, almost. And 2001, Intel Compaq basically sold the intellectual property of the Alpha to it, and that's where some of the enhancements found in the Pentium 4 came from, was from Alpha technology. And soon after that, 2002, a Cray T3e was the fastest supercomputer. Has anybody heard of the top 500?
Yeah,
that's the list of fastest supercomputers in the world. The Cray T3e, which had, I think, 512 nodes of 21 264s, was the fastest supercomputer at the time. And so it was a bit ironic that you know, 2003 was the last Alpha to be released, the 364, which was a little over 1 gigahertz, that it was no longer developed. In spite of it being a very successful high-performance CPU. And then, you know, also in that year, the Pentium 4 was way up there in 3.6 gigahertz. And today, in the top 500, you would find clusters of Opterons or Pentium 4s being used. Also Power, the IBM Power CPU is also...
A 7 CPU.
In there. And the cell. Yeah. That, in my opinion, I think the cell and the IBM Power, they're about the most... the highest performance CPUs that there are in the market. So I set out with a goal of to build a CISC and RISC computer of the similar vintage, so a similar year, and try to use as much hardware and software in common, and then determine appropriate benchmarks to compare the two systems together. So what I have here on display on my benchtop there is an Intel Pentium 2 CPU, 233 megahertz, came out in 1997, and the DEC Alpha 21164, 533 megahertz. They're both ATX motherboards. When you look at that, Intel Pentium 2, 32-bit registers, the data path to RAM, 64 bits, has 4 gigabyte address range for physical RAM. CPU itself, 7.5 million transistors when you count on that card the cache that came with it. The Alpha, in comparison, 64-bit registers, 128-bit data path, so I had to have two of these DIMMs plugged into the board instead of just one DIMM, which is good enough for your Intel CPU. 39-bit physical address space, half a terabyte, and 5.5 million transistors. It had a floating point add unit, floating point multiply unit, two integer units. What else is special about this? Instruction cache, 16K, data cache, 8K. The 21164 had an L2 cache built on the chip, but the PC variant here that I have doesn't have the L2 cache built in. It's on the motherboard. So what I had here in common was the Debian 5 install with the Linux kernel 2.6, compiler GCC 4.2. There was a small variation in compiler subversion on these things. Same amount of RAM, ECC, PC100, same and I tried to get cards of approximately the same year as the CPUs themselves. So I have a 1996 Matrox Millennium PCI card, Adaptec SCSI controller, an IBM 4.3 gig SCSI hard drive. This thing is fairly new. I picked this thing out of the garbage, actually. a lot of these components are out of the garbage. I just plug them in. A good source for old parts. So a SCSI DVD drive, which I used for installing. This is what they look like. Oh, what's not on the list here is I also added on a USB 2 card. And that turned out to be recognized under the Debian system. So I could take my my USB stick here and transfer files from my Alpha system onto the USB stick, get my the programs that I wanted to, the benchmarks that I wanted to compile, put on there. So those two sets of cards worked out fine on either system. The Alpha system was a DEC Alpha PC 164SX. It's just a low performance thing in, you know, on DEC type of hardware if you compare them to DEC workstations. But it was just basically an ATX format motherboard. DEC Alpha in the mid-90s tried to get into the consumer desktop market, but not so successful in selling these things. DEC components were high quality, but expensive. And such a motherboard would be about double the cost of a of an Intel system in comparison. So it just, the system integrators just looked at this thing and said, yeah, how are we going to sell this, you know, if it's double the price of an Intel system? So that was a bit of a problem for Alpha getting into the PC desk market. The L2 cache on this motherboard, 1 megabyte at the bus speed of 100. And also, this is the Linux kernel here, an Alpha generic that it used here. You can see here are the ISA slots, 64-bit PCI slots, 32-bit PCI slots. There's a little thing you can connect a DEC-style terminal, hit the hardware debugger switch, and do some debugging. I never did that. I'm not a programmer. RAM here. It only took ECC RAM. I tried the normal, by 64-bit DIMMs, but it only took the 72-bit things. ATX power supply. These are the typical ATX things that you plug in on the backplane here. Serial, keyboard, mouse, printer. Nothing much else there. But that's what it looks like in the box. The Intel architecture was the motherboard was an Asus P2B, and people came by my display and they would say, wow, this is a really good, this is about the best slot one motherboard you can get. And I said, oh really, you know, I pulled this thing out of the trash. I just needed something that I could plug one of these CPUs into. So I said, wow, okay, that's good. I'll keep that motherboard. A Pentium 2 233. This is the first generation of Pentium 2s, the 805-22 CPU. L1 cache, 16 KB for each. L2 on the card, 512 KB, half the processor speed. Compiler also GCC 4.2 and a Linux kernel also 2626 for the 686. And that's what it looks like in the box. This guy, same cards as with the Alpha. Now, what do I use for a benchmark? Well, first off, I would like to say there are two basic categories of benchmarks one could use. One could use what's called a synthetic benchmark, which is arbitrary code just to show throughput of a CPU. you know, just a mixture of, let's say, integer stuff or floating point operations, just to say, okay, this thing does so many megaflops or whatever. And then there are other benchmarks called kernel benchmarks. And these are chunks of code that are used in real world applications. You know, for example, let's say solving multiple linear equations. And that is basically what the spec uses as a benchmark. It uses kernels. I can't list them off by name, but it has these computational tasks, which are pretty big things when you look at what it does. And these results are audited against a standardized protocol. So these are things that are reviewed just to make sure that people are that are making these, publishing these benchmarks are playing more or less on fair ground, not, you know, tweaking the compiler to such extremes that it's just compressing the code into, you know, unreal situations. But I, you know, contacted Spec and I said, you know, I'd like to have a copy of Spec Int 95 and Spec FP 95, and they said, oh, sorry, you know, we don't sell that anymore. And they said, but we can sell you, you know, Spec the 2000 suite, and it will cost you, I don't know, it was $500 to $1,000 or something. And I said, well, that's nice to know. I will think about that. But, you know, that is the industry standard. So I said, well, gee, there has to be some free software alternatives to this. And there are some benchmarks that give measurements in MIPS, the millions of instructions per second, or, you know, what hardware makers would often quote is how many megahertz these things have. And as I said, you know, I was talking about the alpha 64-bit wide registers, 128-bit data path compared to a 64-bit data path of the Intel. You know, they're not quite comparable when you're looking at total throughput in megahertz. So that is often a poor benchmark if you're comparing between two different types of systems. It's okay if you're comparing an Intel architecture to another Intel architecture 32, but going between two, it's not such a good thing. And if you're looking at RISC versus CISC, also not so good. RISC CPUs, they are typically doing more instructions for one CISC instruction. And so the megahertz difference cancels out on some of these instructions. And a CISC CPU has a lower MIPS than a RISC of similar performance when you look just at MIPS or megahertz. I took a very old benchmark called the Drystone. It's a synthetic benchmark. This, I'm sorry to say, was the only one I was successful in compiling on both systems. As I said, I'm not a programmer. And this is a synthetic C program, and it just typifies the mix of instructions that are found in an operating system kernel. And it doesn't concentrate on any I/O. So it's just going to be looking at CPU throughput and what the memory to CPU subsystem throughput is like. This was first written in 72, I believe, this benchmark. The code size is small. It's one file C program. Originally written in APL, I think it was. But today, this code, I think, fits in the L1 cache. And so it kind of measures L1 cache performance on a modern CPU. So, but I did try version 2.2 by Stephen Pemberton. You can look up this man on his website and compare the two systems. It it is a sort of a script that compiles it with different optimization parameters for the CC, C compiler, I believe that the CC is. Right. Okay. Unoptimized, it was 366,000 dry stones per second, 516 optimized. Put this on the 21164, and I get about the same on an unoptimized code, but a lot higher when it was optimized. I believe the flag was a dash large O, a letter O.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that means.
That's basically an optimization turned on.
Right.
But not the advanced stuff that tends to break when you do a build work.
Right, yeah. So it was just a simple optimization, I guess. But no advanced things. I really have to confess, I know almost nothing about compiling these things. There was a UBench, Unix benchmark, and I thought, wow, this is a great suite of benchmarking things for comparing these two Debian systems and see how they perform on I/O and also, you know, not just the CPU but also the memory. I/O here. Compilation was unsuccessful. I kept getting, you know, error code 2 exit, and it would, you know, it's just a, basically a tar thing that you download, run make whatever, make this, and
maybe it's a problem with the libraries,
or it could be the libraries. Yes. Which I must say that when I installed these two Debian systems, what I did is install the base system from a CD, and then I added on what's called, it's a pseudo package called development or something. Developer? Sorry? Something like that. It enables one to compile C programs, nothing else. I had no desktop, just your terminal command line thing, and I was able to compile things. So there was maybe, if I had installed some other things, it might have satisfied some dependencies or I don't know what, but it would say whatever is undefined, and I would get such compilation errors. So I'm very sorry that I didn't get this to compile successfully. But what I would like to do is work on this and then report on it somehow to, you know, perhaps the VCF list and report that thing. A few other things I had in the pipeline was the Livermore loops. This one I was anticipating would highlight the difference in FPU performance between the Alpha and the Intel architecture. This is a kernel benchmark, FPU intensive, and it tests the CPU power basically, and you get what's called megaflops per second as your output. I don't know much more about that. And then there's the famous LinPack, which is used in the top 500, I believe, as their performance. It's various solutions, I don't know what kind of solution, of 1,000 by 1,000 matrices. And just an example, here is a board of the Cray T3E. That's the one that had the, it was in the number one in top 500 in 2002. And this is one of the processor boards with four of these DEC Alpha 21264 CPUs and a lot of support stuff built into there. Those things are amazing. I never really looked into one of those supercomputers, but it's just amazing what they did. LinPack, well, I might get around to compiling this, but we'll see. And see how it fares in the top 500. So, in summary, comparing these two systems, I did get a dry stone using this this simple optimization. Alpha was a little bit higher than the Pentium 2. SpecInt, SpecFP for the 92 version. I picked these out of the Wikipedia page for the DEC Alpha. And here they compared two systems also from about the same time period, from it was 95 or 96, a 21164 and a Pentium Pro 200 megahertz. So the integer about similar, floating point we're looking at about double in the Alpha. SpecInt and FP 2000 on a later model, the 264, compared to at the same time period, I believe this was in 99, Pentium 3, 1 gigahertz. Again, the integer performance about the same, floating point 3 times faster in the Alpha. So, in conclusion, I got a comparison of these things of similar age, similar vintage. Integer a little bit higher performance in the DEC Alpha. Floating point performance was always faster by several factors. And what happened with the Alpha is it maintained only a niche in scientific computing, these workstations and supercomputing, high performance computing, but never made it into the mainstream desktop market. It just, you know, wasn't so interested in marketing these desktops too much. I'm pretty sure they didn't put much effort into marketing. And, you know, as with most things in business, it doesn't really matter how good the quality is. It just has to get to a certain minimum standard. It doesn't have to be really high quality. What matters mostly is what you put in the marketing, how you, you know, just try to tell lies in a nice way to the public, how you market these things, and also, you know, how much money do you put into this marketing and in the development of these things. And Intel had a lot of resources at hand to market their Intel Architecture 32 CPUs and their systems. And another complication you could say was, oh well, you know, what kind of PC operating systems were available for the Alpha?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not consulting.
Right. So, yes.
I think I can memorize the time. It's for the soldier system.
Oh yeah.
A double the price, and then you have a Windows converter, Windows emulator, running only a few programs.
Yeah.
I've learned only 3 or 4 years later that Linux is running on that stuff, and that would be an interesting alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a very expensive machine and no software wrong.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest problem, is
OS
started to sell it.
Yeah.
I think comfort systems in this way.
Yeah, OS 2 didn't run on the Alpha as far as I know, but there was Microsoft Windows NT version 4.
You get a pack of hardware and software.
Yeah.
And you're limited.
Yeah.
I like.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I do have...
NT 4 was not for Alpha. NT 3.5.1 was for Alpha.
Yeah, also NT 4. They had service packs up to... up to 6 for English.
DFX 32 or something, some program to run standard...
Oh, FX32.
Something that...
Right, I used that.
FX32. Not just for operating system. Operating system is the same, but no. Word processor, no. Paper calculation, something like that. That was missing.
True, but I do have a smaller DEC, the DEC Multia. And that one, I installed Windows NT 4, and I had a CD for Microsoft Word and the spreadsheet thing, that Excel. Yeah, that Excel. That was Word 6, Excel 4. They were compiled for the Alpha. And I believe there was a PowerPoint, no, not a PowerPoint, the, what's that thing that does the database, the Access. Yeah, Access was on... also ported to the Alpha. Yeah, so you could, Vogus did sell those systems, and yeah, that was a good alternative to use NT4. It was fairly stable and good for just workstation or desktop use. And I've also used an FX32 for Intel, you know, Microsoft Windows applications built for Intel, and that FX32 worked fairly well for those. I didn't try things like Photoshop, but I'm fairly sure it would have worked. But normally, if you put in a CD, installer CD for a Microsoft Windows for Intel, try to run it on an Alpha, it just says, sorry, this thing was built for a different CPU. And it would you know, stop with that message.
I remember the Vogus thing. It was good value for money.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was.
It's a pity the market.
A good system. Yeah,
it's
and
a
I,
fine machine.
Yeah, and I really kind of mourn the, you know, the way that the DEC Alpha was no longer developed further. There were, you know, if you look at the Wikipedia site for this thing, there was. You know, not only the 364 was made, but also there was planned the 464 and some plans for the 564, and they would have you know, included respectively what Intel calls the hyper-threading, you know, running multiple threads on one CPU, and then a vector core was being planned for that, and also having it wasn't implemented yet, but putting multiple CPU cores on one wafer of silicon. So all these things that Pentium 4 has come up with were in plan for the Alpha. And it's just a shame that you know, the CPU just dropped out of existence.
They had financial troubles. They almost went bankrupt.
Yeah.
The company.
Uh-huh. And what at what time were those troubles?
I don't know exactly. I think it's late 90s or something.
Oh yeah. Hmm.
There's one performance comparison that really interests me, which is like when BSD pilots, you'd say make world, you just see how long it takes. Does it take an hour and a half, 2 hours, 40 mm-hmm. minutes? It just goes into user source and makes the entire source tree, reinstalls it.
Wow.
Of course, it's not. I mean, that's how we compare machines.
Okay. You know, I'd like to talk to you about that. But
it has limitations. I mean, the limitations are.
No, it's going to test the whole system, everything. In
yeah, it does. Yeah. I mean, so and then of course it sorts it because it depends how fast the disk is. But on the other hand. How good is some GCC implementation on the Alpha? It's the major question. You're actually testing that as well as your hardware architecture. And like,
yeah.
You know, yeah. How many enthusiasts were around to code the back end for the compiler?
Right.
But then you have that yours, don't you? Because you're also using GCC as well. So.
Right, right. Now, that would be a great kind of comparison because these two systems were set up to have the same kind of hardware, same hard drive,
yeah.
Same controller, same PCI bus running 32-bit.
Well, one of the other limitations there is you're not testing floating point because compiler doesn't use floating point to build itself. So.
No, but it's still a good benchmark. You know, benchmarks, you can't just rely on just one little aspect of the system to say, okay, this one's better than that one. Unless you want to, you know, lie a bit and say, you know, we're good at this and that. But just to, it's good to give like a more holistic view of the thing, you know, what it does overall, or what the bits of it do, like the FPU, or what does the memory bandwidth, how does that compare between the two, and just sort of put them all together and give a view of that. I'd like to try that, the big world thing, but BSD? Hmm.
Well, I mean, Linux must have much the same command, I guess.
On a Linux system, you can also try to compile a kernel.
Compile a kernel, yeah.
Maybe compare it to make
That's
The, on BSD, the main world would do the whole of user source, which is somewhere between 500 meg and a few bit more. I'm not talking just a kernel. Yeah. The kernel you get done in, what, quarter of an hour or something. Mm-hmm. Let's say more.
It's a compiled glibc.
No, let's say more. Not just a library. Let's aim for the make command itself, GCC, the kernel, all the libraries,
Gentoo.
Huh?
On a Gentoo system, you can say emerge world, and it compiles the whole system, check everything.
Well, okay, let's...
But so most Linux systems are designed not to be built from source code.
Well, I suppose you're using the wrong Linux system then. Go for Debian. I mean, I use BSD, but if I were to use Linux, I'd only use what the developers use. I mean, none of this other weird stuff. None of the commercial weirdness.
Goes Gentoo.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, what I'm talking about, forget any whether it's Linux or BSD, in generic Unix terms, cd /user/source make a bare minimum. And just see how it takes. That's a good benchmark comparatively between machines.
Yeah, I would need some support for that, definitely.
For floating point, you might want to test Puffray, which is a ray tracer.
Ah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so
you
can test memory throughput and floating points very well.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I think you should be
this
able
will be
to
very interesting because you get Puffray almost on any machine.
Yeah.
Puffray,
is that a graphic card?
The persistence of vision ray tracer.
Does ray tracing on the CPU, so it doesn't care about the graphics card.
Okay.
It's minor graphic card related. Maybe mirroring of light around.
Yeah.
We have a screen description, a ball here, and a tilted floor.
Yep.
And you're calculating all the kind of ray tracing, the lighting stuff. That's the most calculating.
Yeah.
A little bit graphic display.
Yeah. Yeah, that
You can use it as a command line. You don't even need to have a display.
Yeah. And then for this, I think that if you make a demo, you use the graphic part for beauty, but the main calculation is the mathematical stuff behind.
Well, that's a good idea.
It has a built-in benchmark scene, so you can just say do a benchmark and it tells you how long it took.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I can look into certainly.
Puffray would be a very good idea. There's a generic version of Puffray that runs almost on any machine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's. They say portable. Yeah, I'm beginning to. And we expect results next year. Yeah, I could ask the spec company for maybe a donation. Old version, I don't know how I would finagle that, but we'll see. But I would lean towards the open source software route.
What you could do is, for instance, FreeBSD has a whole load of ported packages. So if you were to go on the website there, they have a subdirectory called benchmarks, and it's just stuff full of and other categories called databases and things like that. But in there, you'll find URLs and the make files and any customizations you need to run it on BSD, so that you don't have to think. You just go in there and type make, and it fixes. Or, you know, all those questions that 5 years ago we had to ask. You know, what sort of byte order have you got? Like, what sort of .h file weirdness? All this pain, you know, you don't want to know about. It deals with. And maybe NetBSD might be more painless for you than free. FreeBSD is really PC oriented.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. And, I would like to thank Hans Franke for organizing this VCF. And for the used equipment that I bought, the people who sold those, and I guess I must have also financed in part a company that is based in Luxembourg and begins with E, the letter E. I must have financed that also in part. But also greater thanks, I would say, goes to the free software concept and the people that contribute to free software enable these benchmarks that I used. And also, the garbage bin. Things, today's trash, UCFE Ausstellung.
I think yesterday a guy in his presentation said there's a curve. Very expensive, high heated part,
yeah,
used everywhere, garbage at all, collectible, very expensive because of the
yeah.
Life curve of the products.
That is true, yeah, if it becomes a collectible, yeah. Because, you know, I see these workstations in the trash, and I hold a workstation in my hand, and I'm going, you know, this was, you know, 30,000 DMARC 10 years ago. Wow. It's on my desktop now. You know, it's just amazing what you can find in trash. Well, not household trash, because I work at a university, I just find these things in the trash.
That's right. Pragmatically, a CPU, right, in 1983 from National Semiconductor cost equivalent for me of a 2-week steam on the apps. And it was a straight trade-off. It's going to cost £130 then.
Wow.
And I could do one or the other. So I went for the chip because I was hoping to develop a company, which didn't work out. I should have been skiing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
That's probably the easy way to go, because then you won't have to think about it.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
And
yeah, probably that is the most brain dead way to go. So you don't have to think, you can just run a maximum number of benchmarks. It's just to go into the FreeBSD benchmarkers thing. Yeah, and just see if you can install BSD on the spare partition, and then you can just install all the benchmarks you want to try. And of course, also for this user source, I'm talking about literally CD user source make, or why actually make world will be installed by this. And if you want, you can make minus J3 world, which you'll do. And this, of course, is the same on Linux, because it's just a number of jobs you can run in parallel, which will take advantage of any cache or multiprocessing or IO, fighting for the team. So that's worth doing. Minus J, if it's an older machine, you don't want to do more than minus J2 or J3, because it will just slog it, thrash it. But that's worth doing as well. And I'll come by your stand and have a look. And I've got my laptop with me, so I can show you some of that stuff.
Yeah.